Herzlich willkommen zum Podcast für heilsame Stimme und Klangarbeit mit Katharina Nussbaum. I'm here to welcome Maike Stillwater for the podcast Heilsame Stimme und Klangarbeit, Healing Sound and Voice Work. And Maike Stillwater is known for his chants, for his song sanctuaries, for his song portraits for the last 30 to 40 years, I guess. And he has also created a trilogy of documentaries about singing, about the surge of the great song is one of them. And I'm curious to find out more about him and about his work and about how I experienced him in his heartwarming chants and heartwarming welcoming to people that he meets just for an evening. So, Michael, what I always ask in the very beginning of the interview is, how was your journey to what you do today? How did it start? How did you get there where you are today?
Thank you for asking. Thank you for inviting me into this interview. And it was great to meet you that evening in when we met in Kempton. Mm-hmm. This question, of course, can have different responses based on where in time I started. But I'll just begin with musically. I played clarinet in elementary school at the beginning. For years, I was in the orchestra. Mm-hmm. And the thing about a clarinet, it's a wonderful instrument, but it's hard to sing when you got a stick in your mouth, the clarinet, you know. So I didn't even think about that. I wasn't thinking about being limited. I just played the clarinet. And when I was 13, I picked up my mother's guitar and began playing it. I think the first song was "The House of the Rising Sun," something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was the time of the Rolling Stones and Beatles and Simon and Garfunkel and all of that. They were the stars at that time. And I immediately began singing. Mm-hmm. And I found I really loved it. So I was singing, playing guitar. And in fact, the first day that I was playing, I'm left-handed. So I turned the strings around to go the other way. And when my mother came home, she saw what I'd done to her guitar. And she said later, she said, "Well, that was the beginning of Michael's career and the end of mine." But she was joking. She was very happy that I found a way to play the guitar. And when I went to my first professional teacher, he said, "You can't play left hand. You have to go back the normal way." But then he heard me play and I'd already gotten rather good, and he said, "You know what, just stay with what you got." So I've been playing left-handed all these years, and I was singing at first songs that other people had written, but very soon I began writing my own songs. And then over time I discovered, and now we're moving forward several years, I discovered the joy of songs which everybody knows to sing. And this can also be, I was living in a yoga ashram for a time and singing chants, Sanskrit chants, mm-hmm. which repeat. And it's sacred phrases that repeat. And I began writing chants in English, my mother tongue, mm-hmm. and found the joy of singing these chants in a group. And everybody begins singing them very easily. And what I discovered is that when this was happening, I could let go of performer being the leader or the focus. Mm-hmm. And I could let go and enter into what I call immersion. It's being immersed in the sound of everyone's voice. Mm. And this became an even deeper joy for me. It was so beautiful to be immersed in the sound and having the words of the songs be all about attunement to the heart, coming home to the heart, or through the heart to the great song, this underneath experience of vibration and creativity. And so that became a foundation for my musical work in community, was leading, writing, and then leading participatory chants. Soon after that, I discovered another aspect, and this will be the second dimension of my music that I'll share with you, and that I call intuitive song or spontaneous song. And you experience that in Kempton as part of the evening. It's where instead of taking a long time to perfect the relationship of a word and a melody, and putting them together, which is songwriting, I would go into spontaneous allowing a song to come through. And this is actually something that children all over the world are doing all the time. They're letting songs come naturally. And what's happened is that what I see is that what's happened is that because of wanting to do things perfect, get things right, and also to sound good to other people, there's a tendency to suppress or repress that natural flow because we want, when we're singing in front of someone else, we want it to sound good. And we don't want to be constructing a song in the moment in front of someone else. So what I discovered was there is actually a beneficial quality. There's a power and a beauty and a joy and a healing, all of this that can happen for anyone who reconnects to their child's memory of spontaneous songmaking. And this is what I've seen now for 30 years in workshops all over the world. Is in a very short time, bringing people who are shy, who are naturally, they might not think of themselves as singing or creative. They have constructs in their mind about what they can and can't do, and they hold back in a setting. And this is for anyone, in a setting where you feel safe, where you feel nothing will embarrass you or criticize. In that setting where you feel safe, you very quickly return to your original creative spirit, you're the natural voice, the natural creative song maker. And as this happens, now that you're not a child, you're an adult, you're connected to all of your experiences of your life. You're connected to the wisdom of your being. You're connected to the great compassion of your heart. And all of those elements now are like rivers flowing into the song that comes out of your mouth. And when you do this relationally, because it's a relational practice, it's not just one person by themselves making up a song, it's someone with another person. This is what I found to be the most powerful and easy way to get into this. When you've got two people who are back and forth singing to each other, spontaneous, it opens up the empathy, the kind of the underground connecting river between the people, and the compassion and the kindness that we have for ourselves and for each other. And so basically, that was a long answer to your question. But basically, what happens with this practice, this it can be even an art form of spontaneous song making. We open up to a more complete and deeper sense of who we are in life with other people, with ourself, with life and the universe. So this is all contained within this practice.
Thank you. What stayed with me was the immersion in the sound of which you spoke when you came to say how much joy you found in making your own songs, but also making songs, chants in your mother tongue. And you lived in a yoga ashram for a certain time. Can you say a bit more about this immersion in the sound that you experience when you give a chant wave, when you give the workshop?
Well, most everyone knows this experience. Maybe it's happened in a very intimate and relaxed setting, say sitting around a campfire or in a living room with some other friends, or in a giant concert, a rock concert, and a pop song is being sung and everyone joins in with their voices. And however it happens, the idea is that there's the individual's voice, and then there are others around, friends or audience members, whatever the relationship is. And when it's not just the individual or performer or leader, it's not just their voice, but when all the other voices are engaged as well. Well, a few things happen. One is that not only do you have the tones that the people sing that are obvious, but you have the harmonics, which is the subtler levels of sound that are always happening with every sound that occurs. And when we sing, there's all these harmonics. Some people specialize in that with overtone singing. And overtone singing allows these harmonics to be accentuated. But even without overtone singing, just when we sing together a chant or a song, one of the reasons it's so beautiful to us, or it touches us so deeply, is that not only is there a melody heard or a harmony, but there's these harmonics, these overtones at the same time filling the space. It's almost like if you, in a different metaphor, it's like invisible singers are with us. Right? It's like you have the room of the visible singers, and then you have invisible singers who are adding their voice to the experience. And this, it's expansive, it's joyful, it can even be mystical, it's healing for the heart. All of these elements are happening.
It's beautifully said there to have invisible singers with us while we hear the overtones between the text that we're singing, between the melody that we're creating together. Yeah. And you also told me about the song portraits that you've been written for the last 30 years, and that you've what I understood to now is that you also do it in pairs. So two people together sing with each other, get into a deep connection, deeper relation than they were before. And what is your introduction to this kind of singing? What do you say to introduce this specific way of, interconnecting with each other on a different level, on a different dimension?
Well, there's a name I use for this practice, and it's song sourcing. So it's the source of the song. So it's song sourcing. It's coming back to where it begins. And a beautiful thing about it is it's not language dependent. It can be in any language that anyone speaks in the whole world. And this is why I've been focusing on spreading the song sourcing practice into many cultures. So the essential thing is safety. I mean, that's where everything begins. A person needs to feel that if they do open to this practice of singing something new and there's someone else there, they're not alone, that that person won't be judging them. You know, that they won't be criticizing them. And in a way, we never know. Maybe they will. But we have to, there's an agreement, a field of trust that is established at the beginning of any of these practices, however big the group is, because without that trust, there's no safety. So we begin by just it's more intellectual, like an agreement that I call it the hunter. The hunter is the critique, the Jaeger. It's the one who's always looking for something that's out of sorts. And the Jaeger, the hunter, is very important to us as humans and very important to us when we're learning things. If we want to, for instance, learn something technical and to fly a plane, we better have a very strong Jaeger to correct us, to get us doing it just right. But in a practice that's about actually the undoing of layers of conditioning and protection around ourself and fear of embarrassment, the Jaeger, the hunter, doesn't serve us well because since it's looking for something wrong, it's going to find a lot that's wrong if we're just creating and making new something. So what I ask the people to do, I say, the Jaeger never stops working. You can't just tell the Jaeger to leave. It's there testing everything out. So I just say, just give it a different job. So ask the hunter to protect the space from any intrusion so that you and everyone else is free to create without criticism, without judgment. So everybody seems to get a sense of that and says, okay, we'll do that. So it all starts from that point of view, an agreement for safety, for trust, for not criticizing. And then there's a gentle process of entry into this. It has to be gentle because we've had so much protection and fear and not wanting to be embarrassed. So one thing I do, it always start with just the single person on their own, everybody at the same time with eyes closed, to make something up. And I use almost always until another stage of the game, I use background musical tracks, simple rhythmic harmonic tracks of music, or I play guitar with patterns, simple patterns, which I teach how to do that for those who play an instrument. Because if you have a simple harmonic pattern that repeats, it allows the mind to relax and the ears are listening to the harmonics in this pattern, or the harmony possibility, the melodic possibilities. It's not conveying a melody, but a pattern. And this makes it possible for the individual practicing this to listen and sink into the pattern or the harmonic. And as words come through them, first just spoken words, then hummed, then just on one note, then gradually and sometimes very quickly, that single pitch or note shifts into melody. It moves along with the harmonic. And they find themselves with their own words, their own melody with this pattern, and everyone in the room singing their own words and melody at the same time, but this harmonic pattern is the same for everybody. So it allows for a room filled with sound that is slightly chaotic, but at the same time, it's harmonic. It's all connected. And that is kind of a short answer or a long answer to your short question. And there's much more that goes with it when someone engages. I'll say one more thing, which is that for after 40, more than 40 years of this practice myself, and 30 years of giving workshops for people to do it themselves, this September 2025, in Germany, in Beuron, in a monastery, I'm going to offer for the first time a workshop for those who want to open to the artistry of creating song portraits for other people, with or without playing guitar, not needed. So to go deeper into all the elements, because I've seen all these elements over the years with thousands of song portraits that I see what goes into it. And I've never taken the opportunity to share all the elements that are involved in this. So this is for people, primarily it's for songwriters who wish to get into a healing or service art. And it's for healing, service, caring people who want to move into a musical space because they already know about service, but they want to bring music and song into it. So it's from either end, from the singing aspect or from the care and saying coaches, therapists of any kind, even ministers or people who share with other people, they can come into this seminar in a beautiful monastery setting and begin to open, to let go of old ideas about what singing and music is for and discover this practice themselves. So I'm very excited about what's going to happen in September.
Oh yeah, I can see. I guess it's both ways. Therapists or people who do it in service for someone, it's both service, right? It's pure service of connecting to your higher self, if you want to call it that way, or connecting to the great song you have in yourself and which is created by creation itself. Can you tell me what time, in what week you will have that?
It's the second week of September.
Second
It's,
week of
I believe
September.
it's the 8th to the 14th, but it's all on the website when
I can
someone
put it in the show notes. I'll put a link in the show notes anyway, and
innerharmony.com.
especially to that
And it's a beautiful,
workshop.
this monastery we just spent last
Yeah,
week
you've just been
with the
there, right?
group. And it was a question, is this monastery going to really work for singing and for, creative work? Because you've got all these monks there chanting, five times a day in the nearby church. They're all doing Gregorian chant. And it's the oldest monastery in Germany, oldest Benedictine monastery. And it worked perfect. And they kept moving us to different rooms to find the best room for singing. I mean, we had our workshop room, but it was designed for speaking. But then we found finally, on the last day, a room that's ideal for us to sing and hear our voices, the resonance of our voices together. So
Lovely.
I'm happy about that.
I'm curious. I'm a Kundalini yoga teacher, and what I heard from you about these song portraits that you let people do, that you do yourself in one-on-one sessions, reminds me of White Tantra. I'm not. Are you familiar with White Tantra?
You could say something about it.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't ever been to a session for several hours of White Tantra. All I've experienced till now was maybe it was a 2-hour setting, I think, on the Kundalini Yoga Festival 2 years ago in northern Germany. And what I understood from it is that you connect via eye contact to the person who's in front of you, so to say, and you sing chants or you dance, and then you connect again, and it is often said that people fall in love with the other person because the connection via the eyes goes so deep because souls are meeting there, right? The essential of yourself is meeting, and you see yourself in the other person, and
All of this happens. It's
yeah,
it is you are in a sense you're it's falling in love in a moment, and you do
yeah.
because the walls fall away, and it's two souls who are recognizing each other. And as you said, not only the eyes, but if you are singing together the same tones, and long tones like ah together, the vibration of two voices in resonance together. It's ecstatic, and it totally, yes, it the border between us falls away in that moment. It's an endless space of connection, and What can one say? It's beyond words.
Yeah, it's beyond words. I had once a client who told me she really enjoyed singing with me and she really enjoyed that workshop I gave, but then she went on a chant wave, you can call it, or on an occasion where she met women who speak her mother tongue, Ukrainian. And she danced with them and she said, I need to sing in Ukraine language. So I'm looking for a group that does that here where I live. How was your experience singing, coming from mantra singing, Sanskrit, or maybe also Gurmukhi singing to English? Do you still remember how that felt to sing in your own language in comparison to Sanskrit or other languages?
Sanskrit chant is so deep and ancient and rooted in, well, ancient wisdom of who we are. So when I do Sanskrit chanting, which I still enjoy and practice, but not as much as I did when I was in the ashram, I love it. It's again, like you described the white tantra of the eyes and the voice. It's an immersion. It's so easy to go into a long, long session of a chant. Whereas I would say that when I'm using English in a chant, it doesn't evoke the very, very, very long chants that the Sanskrit does. It's beautiful and it's wonderful and I love it. But I find that there's a feeling of duration with it, of like after a certain amount of time, okay, that's nice. Let's have another another song. Whereas with the Sanskrit, it's you can be, say, lost or found in this endlessness of it.
Okay. So there's an end to the English chant, and there's no end to the Sanskrit chant if you want to make it easy.
I would say that there's a few English chants that one could also feel that endlessness to.
Yeah.
Yeah, say that. Yeah.
What I always like to hear from those are interviews, if you feel as a servant doing your work, so if you feel that you have a higher, I'm missing the English word now, but you have a yeah,
This mission or
yeah, a higher submission to do in the work you do. So vocation maybe might be a calling that you.
yes, calling. Yeah, I have felt that from when I was very young. I lived on the East Coast of America, of the United States, and I felt one of the first callings I felt was that there was a musical purpose in my life, and that I was to go west out to California. So when I was 17, I went out to California, and it was all part of a mission that was not clear, but I had this sense even then, even when I was 16 or even 15, it began, was there was a sense that there was a mission for me with song and chant that was to be shared with the world and to support people in remembering what now I call the great song, remember reconnecting to the great song in them.
Beautiful, yeah.
And to know that I've known for a long time, because one can get caught up in feeling a mission for others. And what, of course, and that can be a fine thing, but one can get caught up in it and forget that the primary original mission is to come home oneself. So that I always remember that it's coming home. So my mission begins with coming home through my heart to the great song. That's the mission. And then the echo or the reflection of that mission is to invite others to remember for themselves to come home to the great song within them. That's basically it.
Yeah, coming home first, and then what you radiate is inviting others to do the same. Yeah. And do you have the feeling when you chant with others, or when you give one-on-one sessions, song portraits, that you go into a different state than as you are now, just talking to me? Do you have a different presence of yourself in that, in those moments?
It's less different now. In other words, my normal or daily consciousness is more and more similar to where I am when I'm offering a song portrait. However, the song portrait state of mind, we'll call it, is of a particularly I don't know if the word is rarefied, meaning it's like an atmosphere. Here's the thing, for delivering the song portrait, and this is also with this course I'll be giving in song portraits, it's all about that, but it's a joining with or a entering into a consciousness of shared openness to the great song, or to this, even we could call it a river of kindness between us. And when I open, I or anyone opens to that place, it's as if the window opens to allow through whatever is helpful, whatever is good, whatever is needed in that moment in terms of message. So we're talking about the receiving and the delivery of message. What is the message? What's needed in this moment? And if I use my mind, I could say, how do I know what's good for you? How can I know? But if I relax the mind and open the heart and open this connection between me and you, then it's like a gate opens, which allows this flow. Yes. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does answer my question, and it's interesting to me to hear from you that the difference is getting less, or is getting less maybe with age. Yeah, and I have this quote of the Jesuits in mind that says I'm missing the Latin word now, but what their aim for living is to live meditation, basically contemplativo in vivo, something like that, or
That's a good quote.
contemplatio in vivo. So yeah,
Yes.
living a contemplative life in every moment, and not just in prayer or singing, or right.
Yes.
Oh,
That's
comes
beautiful.
close to it. Yeah, we're reaching the end of the interview. Is there something you love to share with those listening?
Well, if someone is listening who is hearing all about this and is thinking, well, that's all nice for you to say. I mean, you were writing songs when you were a young person, and here I am in my life and I've never written a song, and I don't really feel comfortable singing on my own. I like singing with other people, but this is not for me. I can't do that. I would say to this person that first of all, I hear you, I understand you, and it's totally makes sense that you would feel that way after all that you've been through, and the early experiences you had where maybe your voice was rejected, or you were criticized about it. You thought, well, let me focus on things I'm good at and not do this other thing. But what I would say to you is that there is a treasure within you. There is a beauty and a treasure in your soul, which takes a creative expression as you allow it. It you could say it wants to, and you could also say that when you don't, when any one of us does not allow this creative river to find an outlet through us, whether singing or something else, our heart suffers. We feel somehow, you could even say we could feel lonely or hungry, either of those elements, hungry for something, this nourishment that comes from our own allowing of the creativity to flow through us, and lonely that we, this companion of our life, our creative expression is our companion all life long. And if we're not giving it expression, we're missing this companion. I would say go for it.
So yeah, everybody's got a treasure within themselves that is waiting for getting a space to
And one
create
more
it.
thing I would say, Katrina, is that the three films that my wife and I produced are addressing this exactly. And what's cool about a film is you don't need to have any investment, like in a workshop where you were needing to participate or do something. You just watch a film, and it can be inspiring by itself. So I would recommend, and maybe you could include in whatever you're posting, the links to view the films. All the films are available online, and see how that might inspire you to open your life to your own treasure of what's within you.
I will. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You're a wonderful interviewer, and I look forward to seeing what you do with this.
Das war der Podcast für heilsame Stimme- und Klangarbeit mit Katharina Nussbaum und Michael Stillwater im Gespräch. Danke, dass du reingehört hast. Danke, dass du zugehört hast. Danke, dass du diesem Podcast folgst, ihn abonnierst, ihn mit 5 Sternen bewertest, sodass er sichtbarer wird, dass er mehr Menschen erreicht, dass mehr Menschen diese von dieser wunderbaren Arbeit der Stimme- und Klangarbeit erfahren dürfen und sie für sich nutzen können. Ich freue mich, wenn du ihn weiterempfiehlst und damit anderen Menschen ein Geschenk machst. In der nächsten Folge wird es um das Chakrentönen gehen und die Wirkung dessen. Bleib dran und Licht, Liebe und Erdung in deinen Tag oder in deine Nacht. Deine Katharina.